Hey everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of The Belma Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. For those of you who are at Pursuit 2014, we already miss you.
Yes.
Ooh, we're just walking around the office with sad faces because our fun friends are no longer here.
Come back and party with us.
Now we're just stuck with each other, which you know isn't good. So, no, we're just trying to drown our sorrows, but we're hanging in there. But no, it was a fabulous, fabulous conference. Hopefully y'all have jumped on the page. I guess now there's a Pursuit alumni page created on Facebook where people are posting photos and stuff. And, of course, stay in touch with us at boundless.org as we talk about where we go from here. Like, what are we going to do? I mean, and are we going to have one of these again? Ah!
Definitely.
Oh, my goodness. I'm just so nervous about it. So, well, and Andrew, you were just saying you're going to blog. You blogged about it.
Yeah, I did. I'm pulling together kind of like 20 of my favorite things for Pursuit.
Okay.
And yeah, it was really fun to write. Just like was remembering back through the weekend, like there are so many great things.
Yeah. How'd you narrow it down to 20? My goodness.
Well, very carefully.
That's going to be coming on the blog very soon if it's not not there already. So, all right. Well, later on in the show, and I want to mention right now that this is actually a show produced by our own Anthony Ashley.
Hey.
So, shocking that none of our segments will be dealing with wild animals, beards, beer, or what are your other passions? I don't know. I mean,
those are
maybe those are
things.
Future
geography.
Shows. Future shows. Yeah, geography. Yeah.
Mountains, splitting logs.
Oh, my goodness.
Next part of
wow.
Log Cabin.
Okay, yes. Well, later on in the show, we're actually going to have an inbox question from someone. I think it's a guy. We actually didn't know who it was from, but I'm going to assume it's a guy. Wondering about that decision of renting or buying a home, should you keep a future spouse in mind when you go there? So kind of what does that look like? How far ahead should you plan? Then for our culture segment, I am talking to Joshua Becker. He is the author of Simplify, and his website is becomingminimalist.com about his journey and recommendations for not letting your stuff own you. And he also talks about other ways to simplify your life. But here we are for our roundtable. And we have got Evelyn, Andrew, and Anthony here. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hello.
Hey, hi. Evelyn is new to the Boundless Show, a friend of Martha's, a church bud or former church bud. Until Martha dissed you or whatever she did. What happened there? She's not even here, so we're just going to talk about that. But anyway, but we're going to talk about this leading into the culture segment, just how this idea of stuff and, you know, letting go of stuff and our view of stuff really even shapes our own lives. So as we kind of start, we have to get a framework for where everyone is in this journey. So I want to know if you had someone walk up to you and say, what are your assets? How would you describe that? What in relation to stuff? Who are you as a stuff person? I'll start. I own a home. I own a 2-bedroom home with a yard that is literally, I feel, one of my biggest sources of clutter. I mean, my just being a single person with a large front and backyard that I now hire someone to maintain for me, not okay. So that just bugs me. But I have one car. I have a house that generally, I don't like clutter, so I have a house that generally doesn't have clutter. Everything has a place, but I have a lot of place to put stuff in. So I feel like I have stuff. I have a garage. Why does a single person need a garage? I got all those plastic tubs. Yikes. Anyway, what about you, Anthony?
Yeah, I have a very small 1-bedroom house for me, my wife, and 2 kids. So we live in a very minimalist space, and we actually
where do those kids sleep?
They sleep in the room.
You're all in the same room?
No.
Oh my
well,
god.
Well, we were until they
I was gonna say,
until
is this like a yurt? Okay.
When they were older, we were like, nah, it's not gonna work. So we sleep in the living room and they sleep in the bedroom now. So
okay.
And we actually love it. Like, it's ridiculously small, and for a while I was kind of grating against it, and then eventually I just would come home and be like, I love this place. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we have a small kind of shed outside with mostly camping gear and tools, and 2 cars. My most important objects are a laptop and a guitar.
Okay.
So once we had to evacuate because the power plant near our house blew up and they were like, you should get out of there. And I realized, hey, it's cool that all we need to take are like a laptop and guitar. So
yeah.
Saying,
yeah. Okay. So if you had to move, could you move most of your stuff in your 2 cars? Do you think? Not counting furniture.
Not really. No. Since we've had kids, we've gotten a lot more stuff.
Oh, okay.
Before I got married, I could literally fit all my earthly possessions into a small Corolla, like an old small Corolla.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And then I got married and had kids, and so that was less possible.
Stuff happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Okay, Andrew.
Yeah, I probably, I would say I don't own a home. I rent with a few other guys. Renting homes is, I recommend that when you're single. If you don't, if you're not ready to buy a house, it's great to rent a house with some guys that you want to do life with. And then I do have a car that I bought back in 13, which was a new car. I never thought I'd own a new car, but I did. I did get a good deal on it, so I'm sure that's going to be a great point for this.
Well, that's
podcast.
Obviously a big fail.
Yeah,
so
I know.
Whatever. We'll
I know.
Talk
so
to you about
Dave
that.
Ramsey is screaming at you right now.
I'm ready for correction. Mm-hmm. But probably when I think about my possessions, I have a gob of books. Like I am a book hoarder for sure. Mm-hmm. And all of them are books I would say that at some point in my life I may refer back to. I do not have books just to have books, but I have books that like I want or that I think I'll use in my career at some point. I do love technology, so I have a Mac computer that I love, and I have a lot of Mac gadgets, an iPhone, an iPad. And then I buy a lot of my clothes at thrift stores. Hmm. So I am thrifty that way. Mm-hmm. And I'm always taking stuff back. So I'll like have something for a while and then I'll be like, I don't ever want to wear that again. And so I'll just get rid of it. So mm-hmm. I do kind of, whenever I move, that's when I kind of clear out a lot mm-hmm. of stuff because I don't want to move it. Mm-hmm. And I usually get rid of a ton of books at that time too. Mm-hmm. It's like, if I don't think I'm ever going to use this again, it's out of here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're not willing to do the Kindle thing? Like you want the physical books?
Yeah. Yeah. I like to mark them up. I mean, I do have some that I've downloaded the eBooks of, mm-hmm. but for commentaries or things that I'm going to mark up or things that I think I might come back and study this,
yeah.
I want the physical book.
Okay. How about you, Evelyn? Because you have a family as well.
I do have a family, yeah. My story is actually almost exactly like Anthony's, which is really fun to hear. We live in a 450-square-foot apartment. We're also downtown. And my husband and I downsized. We used to own a home on the east side. And once my first son was coming along, we decided, oh, gosh, we can't handle this financially when I stepped onto part-time work. So we downsized. And we ended up selling our home just last summer. And so now it's kind of weird. You ask me what assets we have and I'm thinking, well, zero, because we rent and we own both of our cars, but they're crappy old things that we're grateful that they run. but we have zero debt. And mm-hmm. We have a lot of stuff, it feels like, for our small apartment. But we still own a storage unit that is just chock full of stuff, and it just makes me shudder to think when we finally open this thing, gosh, what on earth is in here that we've lived for 4 years without, and I'm just going to have to open it up and have a big storage unit sale because we don't need it,
yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, we've got kid stuff, and we have technology, but none of it is irreplaceable.
Yeah.
You should have an auction. Like that reality TV show, and just auction off your storage room.
Seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Like going minimalist sale or something.
So with all of us being believers, obviously there is a biblical way to view money. Jesus talked about money a ton in scripture. Has any of this influenced the way that you view stuff? Or, I mean, how do you reconcile what you know from scripture to what you are being pressured to buy in the culture or just pressured to be aware of or be in the sphere of or potentially own someday, you know, kind of what has that looked like for you?
Hmm. Yeah, I wrestle with that a lot. Primarily, I'm big on automating my finances as much as possible. So mm-hmm. I automate all my giving. Mm-hmm. So I give to my church and I give to different organizations that I like, and I've kind of set, here's what I want to give. Mm-hmm. So that automatically happens. Every time I receive, you know, a paycheck, like, part of that goes to my church and to these organizations that I support. And so in some ways I'm like, all right, at least I have that baseline there. But I think that's an area where I'm constantly convicted. Like, do I need, because there's a few areas where it's like, if a book comes out, it's like, I want to go get that book. Like, I think it'll bless my life. And it's easy too with like Christianese type stuff where it's mm-hmm. like, oh, well, if I buy this book, it'll like make me a better Christian. Like, mm-hmm. of course Jesus wants me to have it.
Remember, library. When my book comes out next summer, it will bless you.
Yeah. It'll bless you. When can copy I pre-order that?
Yeah. Yeah. Every copy you purchase will bless you, Andrew.
Yeah. but I think so it's kind of like, it's easy for me to think generally I'm pretty careful with being frugal. so I can indulge on like my tech stuff or my book stuff, but everything else I'm kind of cheap on. And I also go to garage sales all the time. Like a great, you know, part of this discussion is if you go to garage sales and you accumulate a bunch of stuff that way, mm-hmm. it's cheaper, it's easier on your wallet, but you're still accumulating a ton of stuff,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And so I've gone through waves where I like love garage sailing and I'm like finding all these great deals yeah. and it feels good. But then I'm like, do I really need this stuff?
It's not mm-hmm. cheap if you don't need it.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's yeah. like my sister. She's like addicted to buying running shoes and she'll find them just with these amazing deals. But now she has like 11 pair. Hmm. And I'm like, you still spent more on 11 pair yeah. buying them on sale than you need when you need like one, two max.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. So, okay.
Hmm. I just think about, you know, as Christians, we follow Jesus and, a couple of years ago, I was thinking about how we live and I was thinking about how Jesus lived. And it is striking to think that he, as Lord of this earth, of this entire universe, didn't own a thing when he lived here. He didn't, and we never ever read about things that Jesus owned. He didn't have a home. The Bible says he didn't have a place to rest his head. And so when I think about wanting to own a home or, you know, wanting more stuff or wanting a new outfit or something like that, I often remind myself that if the king of the universe, who we actually model our lives after, didn't own a thing, he just walked through this earth concentrating, caring about people, caring about hearts, and not batting an eyelash at stuff, then, gosh, maybe that should be a little bit more our mindset as well. But it's hard when there's Pinterest and TV and garage sales and, sure. you know, big sales that it's hard to pass up. But mm-hmm. One way we monitor that is we don't have TV. So there are no ads, you know, shouting at us, hey, buy this, buy that. And mm-hmm. We don't go garage selling very often. And we kind of just buy stuff if we need it. And, you know, there are other times the books comes out or something and you think, oh, gosh, I need it now. But I've found that if I just wait, you know, even a month, a week or two, oftentimes that, oh, I need this, will go away. And you'll find a different way of filling that with something that you already own or, you know, or the library. There is a library. That's what
yeah.
I do.
yeah.
So I'm number 47 in line for yeah. a certain book that just came out. So I will read it in a couple of years.
Yeah. yeah. That's good.
Exactly. So what do you think in light of that and in light of what Scripture says about the whole, you know, us taking off our tunic and sharing with others, does that, practically speaking, I mean, do you guys actually do that? Do you have enough margin in your life to be able to truly share, you know, and to realize that, wow, you know, sometimes having stuff, we can have the space to give, or maybe by us not having so much stuff, we can then give to others? Or do we share from what we already have? I mean, I don't know, you know, I don't know that anyone wants to share your 450 square foot apartment.
We have had a couple of guests and they haven't come back. So.
Okay. Rude.
Well,
no, rude people. Seriously.
For us, I mean, our house is hardly bigger than that, but we actually have like tons of parties at our house. Mm-hmm. And and try like every month to have people over for dinner. And for us, it's less about like having lots of space for us to kind of spread out in and more about just really high quality hosting. And like over and over, people come to our house, and even though it seems like it would be ultra cramped, they actually come away thinking and saying, you know, like, oh, it's just so like happy being here, you know, mm-hmm. and people are comfortable. So I don't think a small space is necessarily a limitation, but definitely for us, the space we live in, because it's small and has no garage or even a driveway, it's ridiculously cheap. So, I mean, I've looked into it, like how much it would cost to expand and whatnot, and like that's our giving money each month plus some. So, like for us, there's a direct correlation there. Another big factor of this for us is just like gratefulness, and I feel like a key for us to being happy with the house we live in or the cars that we have is just gratefulness, and so that's been a cool discipline to walk in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the thing that I like what I'm hearing is that if you're going to make these decisions, then do it for the sake of the kingdom. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, anybody could say, oh, I'm just going to be simple because, you know, that's my value or whatever. But it's when you take those steps because you can help somebody else, or you start to really get a vision for, Jesus said, store up treasures in heaven. Mm-hmm. That means store up treasures in heaven. Like, don't let this world be all where you have all your stuff or where you have all of your, you know, think about kingdom resources and things. And I think that's the stuff where I like the idea of give until it hurts. You know, like mm-hmm. look at your budget and think, what would hurt for me? Because I'm a single guy and I have, you know, a good job and some other side jobs that I do. And it's like, yeah, if some people looked at my budget, they might be like, dang, like you have a lot of margin there. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, what am I doing with it? Am I, you know, paying off school loans? But, you know, but at some point I might get to the point where I like pay off those school loans. And then it's like, wow, I have a lot of margin. Mm-hmm. You know, what do I do then? Mm-hmm. How do I do that in a way that honors God? And so I think always thinking about it in terms of that hospitality. I love in the book of Acts where Luke tells us no one had need. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean they were all rich. Mm-hmm. That means when believers had a need, like they had a legitimate thing, like we have this need, that the other believers just came alongside and met those needs. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want to be able to be in my own life is when I have resources to always be thinking about, Lord, where are the needs that need met? Like, mm-hmm. and sometimes that's such a big question. Like if you look at your community and think, man, there's a lot of needs. I could find needs everywhere. But especially in the church, you know, if I have a brother or sister at church that has a need, hopefully there's a mechanism where either the church generally is helping, and I'm supporting that by giving to the Deacon's Fund or however that works in your church. So I think that, I think looking at your budget and thinking, okay, like, am I spending 90% of all this on me, or how can I push myself a little bit? Mm-hmm.
I love that you guys both mentioned keeping a kingdom perspective and gratefulness, because those are the two things that have just been so huge for me over the past 4 years. Being mm-hmm. grateful has really, really helped me just learn to be content in our space. Mm-hmm. And it's gone from that first year just hating it and just counting the days until we move out. And then we didn't move out and we didn't move out again. And here we are 4.5 years later. And you know, we love it. It's gonna take dynamite to get us out of this little shoebox, is what we call it. And so the gratefulness has been a huge piece for us, just being thankful to the giver of all good gifts, because this place is a gift to us.
Yeah. Mm. And I think there's a mindset there of, Anthony and I had talked about this, about whatever you do, because for me, you know, I have a career and stuff like that. And as I've looked at my career over the years, it's kind of like maintaining that attitude of, just because I get this advancement or this raise or whatever, it doesn't mean that I move on to the next big thing. I mean, you just pair where you are. Because I'm like, you know, I'm still single like I was when I was 22, living in an apartment. But it's like, I don't need a bigger space just because I make more money or because I don't need a bigger place for parties. I don't need another car. I don't need a better car. My car still gets me places. You know, and so that idea of we don't have to keep expanding based on our circumstances too. Right. Because now, as I have more margin, then I can do the stuff that for me is very fun, like going out with friends and picking up the tab, or helping, you know, my sister manage a vacation, or be able to fund a vacation to do with me or something, or catch her vacation or something like that, you know, and that kind of stuff. That's just a very joy inducing, I think, in that sense. I think that's cool.
It's a cool thing that Randy Alcorn says to that point. And like, he and his wife, you know, sat down and prayerfully, thoughtfully set a standard of living for themselves, you know, whatever that looks like. And they agreed that whatever money they make above that, they would give away. And exemplifies an important point that, like, right now is the time to like establish those values and to develop those habits of gratefulness, of modesty in terms of like what we possess and so on. All those habits, if you wait until you have all that money and then have to figure out what to do with it, then, you know, you won't have the character in place with which to manage it well, like, you know, the Alcorns or, you know, and so on. So, yeah, I think now, no matter how poor you are, is the time to like establish those really kingdom-minded principles and habits.
Yeah. I remember reading an article about, it was related to Oprah, and just how many properties around the world she owns, and then the staffs that she has to run those properties, when in fact she visits them like once a year, maybe. Just all of that. And you think of all the accountants and all the people, and then you're wondering about who's ripping me off, who's, and I'm like, that would keep me up at night. And so praise God, I am not her. I mean, that's all I can say. I would just be like, there's no way. I can't even deal with it. Which brings me kind of to my last question. So we've all kind of been talking here, and I mean, it's easy for us to think, you know, oh, pat ourselves on the back, we're all doing pretty well. But how could you see yourself even growing further in this area? Where is God trying to stretch you in the way you think about stuff, the way you think about managing, whether it's possessions or time, energy, relationships? Where do you need to go from here knowing that you talk about the peace and the joy that it has been bringing into your life.
I loved that quote that you just shared, Anthony, because a while ago I was convicted about giving not just out of the excess that we have, but giving out of what we do have, because that's sacrificial mm-hmm. giving when it hurts and when you really, really could use this money for things in your life and you're actually giving up things to be able to, you know, benefit someone else, whether it's a compassion child or whether it's, just mm-hmm. taking your friends out for dinner or something. It's sacrificial. And I would really love to see my husband and I sit down and be able to, okay, decide this is our budget, but where can we start carving out little niches to be able to give when it hurts and mm-hmm. Where we feel really called to, because mm-hmm. that is a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. That's what we're called to do. Mm.
Yeah, I think for me personally, the thing that has probably most of my adult life been the thorn in my budget is food. I spend too much money on food. Mm. And it's easy to do when you're single and you feel like, oh, I have money for food. But it's just so easy to go out with friends. And that's, there's a social component there where mm-hmm. it's like, I'm going to go spend more money than I need to for food because I want to be with friends or, mm-hmm. I mean, and that's a fun thing in life, but there's a lot of months at the end of the month where I'm like, oh man, I didn't hit my budget or I didn't do that. Or I'm always thinking about ways I'm going to fudge my budget. Mm-hmm. I'll take money from books.
no, you won't.
Yeah. And I take money from other things for books. Uh-huh. But I think that's just an area that I feel like I'm always challenging myself is like, you know, how can I do that simply, and thinking about even just the people in the world who I have three meals better than they have one meal, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, just that, I mean, it's just like, it's just one of those things where I just am always humbled by that. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know what the answer is, but that's an area where I feel like I can do better.
Yeah. Well, I have your answer. It's called a rice cooker and a crock pot. And you're going to start. So, okay. And then you can have all your friends over and you can have your social component.
There you go.
FYI.
Problem solved.
Yeah. See, thank you for this podcast.
I know.
I'm so grateful.
I'm a fixer, Andrew.
There you go.
I just tell it like it is.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, I'd say a big challenge in my life is in giving God more permission, more control, and like more of an invitation into all the areas of my life, like my possessions and money. And I still make lots of frivolous purchases and I want to become much more mindful with the way that I spend the money that I steward, and to really think, like, not to be like totally weighed down every time I buy, you know, a candy bar or see a movie, but more like, you know, this healthy, like, pursuing something bigger versus always being kind of like drawn around by whatever, you know, temporary desire I have. So thinking, you know, well, with this money, I could, you know, subscribe to this service that I don't need, or I could, like, you know, support this missionary, whatever. So I think with this conversation, the immature response would be, oh, well, like, because of this talk, everyone needs to live in a tiny house or everyone needs to do this. Mm-hmm. And I think the point is that the value is we need to invite God into the way that we relate to possessions and money and objects. We need to have a theology of owning stuff, a theology of stuff. And we need to very, very with open hands to say, like, God, like, what do you think about this? What do you think about how I'm living? What are you challenging me or drawing me to and so on? So instead of assuming that part of our lives doesn't matter to him, like giving that over, and that's something I want to do more.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I think I want to go through and just figure out what are the things that are taking my time and energy to maintain and or pay other people to maintain, as I talked about in my yard. It just bugs me. And just think to myself, yeah, so if I were to up and leave or go on a work trip, could I just open my home to someone that needed a place to stay, and I wouldn't have to give them a big old long list of things that they would have to do on my behalf to maintain my level of stuff and all the things that just have to be kept in motion and all this nuttiness and stuff, and just be able to, you know, I kind of have this arbitrary I don't know, this arbitrary point in my head where I'm just like, what could I leave tomorrow? Like, could I just leave tomorrow and do something and not be shackled to the responsibilities, the stuff, the schedules that I have? I mean, just even my, you know, even like contacts, I mean, relationships. Am I just, you know, who are the people that are important to me and who are all these other people that I think I'm having to like maintain in my sphere. It just, it's very exhausting. Mm. I don't want to make anyone feel bad, but I'm making everyone feel bad as a result.
Totally.
So maybe that's another whole conversation. So, well, great thoughts, you guys. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Sure. Thank you.
I see how you have brought me such a long way. It's kind of funny on those same days. I feel so far away from where we'll be. I know sometimes what it means for me to follow is tapping.
Well, folks, we are here with this week's culture segment, and I have got Joshua Becker on the phone. Hey, Joshua.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Good to have you here on The Boundless Show. Now, do you go by Joshua or Josh?
I do go by Joshua. Thank you so much for asking.
Okay. Not that I won't just throw in Josh once in a while either. You know, I just ask out of courtesy, but then basically I just call you what I want. So whatever.
Yeah, that would be just fine. My wife calls me Josh and my mom calls me Josh, but everyone else I've convinced to go with Joshua.
Okay. Well, I'll call you Joshua, whatever. Well, hey, Joshua is a full-time writer, author, speaker. He was a pastor in the past. We were just talking about this. He was actually up in Vermont, pastoring the 6 Christians that live in that state. No, just kidding. But anyway, now living in Arizona, author of the book Simplify, among some other books. In fact, you basically take the principles of what you call kind of minimalism, right? And have applied those not only to your own life, but now you talk through it relating to individuals as well as parenting and kind of the structure, you know, what that can look like even through through a Christian lens and a biblical lens. So I want to kind of kick this off because we've touched on this subject before here. And of course, maybe this is an easier topic to talk about with our audience than it is maybe with boomers who would just have like tons of crap lying around their house. But, you know, our folks, maybe they can't afford it. I don't know. Some of them. But then they're just like loading up on all these MacBooks and stuff. So maybe that's our problem. But I want to know, first of all, starting out with a framework for this, why is what you consider, you know, minimalism? And maybe I'm going to have you define that. Can you define that for us and then say why that actually is a Christian ethic per se? Why do believers even need to care about this?
Sure. Yeah. Let me give you maybe a 45-second story that'll probably turn into a couple minutes just to lay the foundation for my thinking, because I did not get into minimalism because of Christianity, but I got into it because of a conversation with my neighbor who was in Vermont, and since there's only 6 Christians in Vermont, the chances are pretty slim that she was not one of them. But it was a Saturday morning. I was cleaning out my garage. I had all my stuff piled up in the driveway. My 5-year-old son was alone in the backyard, kind of running back and forth every 20 minutes to ask me to play with him. I kept pushing him off. I can't. I got to work on the garage. I can't. I got to work on the garage. My neighbor notices this taking place, and she's outside working on her home as well. This is ours, right? This is what we do on Saturdays in America. And we're walking past each other. She makes the comment, "Oh, the joys of owning a home." And I'm like, "Yeah, well, you know what they say. The more stuff you own, the more your stuff owns you." And she responded with a statement where she said, "You know, that's why my daughter is a minimalist. She keeps telling me I don't need to own all this stuff." And I just remember looking at the pile of dirty, dusty possessions that I'd spent all morning cleaning piled up in my driveway. I remember looking at my son alone in the backyard, swinging on a swing by himself. and just had this realization that everything we own isn't bringing happiness into our life. And we know that. We know we're not finding happiness in the things that we buy. But even worse than that, and this is the part that got me, everything I own was actually distracting me from the very things that do bring me joy, purpose, fulfillment, happiness. And so the more we own, then the more money we're spending, energy we're spending on it, cleaning it, managing, organizing it, take care of it, you know, replacing it, repairing it, all these things just begin to soak up our resources that we could be spending on things that are far more important. And so we began living this life, getting rid of anything in our house that we didn't need, that didn't need to be there. And suddenly we found out, hey, our life is freer. We're able to do the things that God has called us to do better. And suddenly this whole idea of everything that Jesus said about money and possessions began to make sense to me. I used to think it was a like this huge sacrifice that I would take care of the poor, that, you know, that I would give up everything and make my life miserable today, but my life in heaven would be great because there'd be super cool rewards. Mm-hmm. But in reality, Jesus just knew what he was talking about, and he was just inviting us to a better way to live when he went on and on about getting rid of your possessions and taking care of the poor and being generous, and he just had a better way to live. And so this is what kind of guided our framework into minimalism.
Yeah. Okay, but wasn't it, like, easy for Jesus? Because, like, if you have one cloak and one pair of sandals and you're just trekking around to some fishing villages, like, how... I need you to talk to us, Joshua, about how, you know, Jesus talked a lot about money not owning us and what to do about it. But what does that look like for, say, for example, a 21st century single person who...
Yeah.
Is basically just kind of, you know, accumulating some stuff, not big stuff maybe, but just stuff in general. It's just so hard.
Yeah, it's super hard. we see 5,000 advertisements every single day, and they all tell us the same message, that we'll be happier if we buy whatever they're selling. And sooner or later, they get into our thinking, and it just starts to... guide who we are and what we're doing, and we don't even take a step back to think, hey, wait a minute, maybe the stuff I'm buying is actually distracting me from what God has called me to do. And you know, it's interesting because when I first got into this and first went online and searched for minimalism, I found a whole bunch of different people that they were living this life, and they were living out of backpacks, and they were moving to new countries every 4 months, and they were moving into these tiny homes and people's backyards, and they were living with just 100 things. They listed on a sheet of paper, and I never felt called to live that way. Like, I don't want to travel to new countries every 4 months. I was working at a church. I was working in youth ministry. We had 3 different small groups meeting in our house over the course of a week. And I'm like, there are just things that I need to own in order to accomplish what God has called me to do. For example, couches would be nice for people to sit on. I'm going to need more than 4 forks in my home if I want to be hospitable and if I want to have people over for dinner. And so our guiding principle became, minimalism is the intentional promotion of everything I most value and then the removal of anything that distracts me from it. And certainly I get my value, I get my purpose based on what God has called me to do, and I realize, just like everyone else, that God has called each of us to do different things with our lives. So what do we need to own to do that? And then what is all the stuff that we're just accumulating that is actually keeping us from doing the very thing he's called us to do?
Okay. So give us an example of, like, as you decided to start this experiment. And it's funny because I'm going to have to send this link to our Focus on the Family president, Jim Daly. Monday, I just had a conversation with him, and he had spent his entire weekend cleaning out his garage, which I just figured was, you know, you load up a few boxes and sweep it out. And he said, no, I actually pulled in a 22-foot dumpster for my garage. And I'm like, well, obviously, if you're needing a dumpster, you couldn't even park your cars in the garage? And he's like, well, sometimes I could because we have a 4-car garage. So it was just a very funny conversation in light of what we're talking about right now.
I've been meaning to talk to Jim.
Yeah. So I'm kind of like, I'm going to give him the, are you really focusing on your family smackdown? What were your boys doing while you were cleaning out your garage? And you see your example.
Yeah. Exactly.
So I need to know, when you began this, what were your toughest things to pare down front and center? And then are there things that keeps kind of trying to creep back in? And what do you do to manage that?
Yeah, absolutely. The first question, it's interesting when I talk about minimalism and simplicity, generally speaking, most people agree that we own too much stuff. Mm-hmm. Rare is the person who has ever told me that I'm wrong about this and that their life really is better when they own more stuff than they need. And so people, when we have this conversation, the first question that they typically comes to mind is, yeah, but what am I going to do? How am I ever going to get rid of this? How am I ever going to get rid of my books, my sentimental things? How am I ever going to be able to get rid of this or that? And I would say, don't start with the hard stuff. Like, we didn't start with the hard stuff. We just went room by room, and we took some boxes and bags, and there's decorations that we just got on clearance that didn't mean anything to us, and there's clothes that we didn't wear, and there's kitchenware that we didn't use, and obviously I had a garage full of things that needed to be cleared out. And so we started grabbing the things that we knew we didn't need. The hardest part for me became the storage room in the basement, and I actually didn't get to it for a couple years until we moved. We eventually moved into a smaller house as well, which brought even more benefits, you know, less mortgage, less maintenance, less work. Mm-hmm. And as we did that, then I was forced to get rid of those things because I had less storage to where I was going. Hmm. And so the average American home has doubled in the last 40 years, and still 1 out of every 10 Americans rent storage off-site. And because we have the room, we accumulate the stuff, and we just shove it in the closets and the drawers and the garages and the basements. And so what I found is that the getting to that stuff, I actually had to downsize my physical space in order to curb that, you know, curb that influx of things that just keeps coming in. And so that was one of the big things that we did. There's other things. I turned off television. That was like just an important one. I mean, the entire television industry is based on selling us something. You know, it's only there because advertisers can sell us on things. And of course, you know, none of us think that the advertisements affect us, but, mm-hmm. but they do. And so that was a big one. There's other things just about keeping some clean counters, and you know, I think as you have less clutter, then you're less inclined to collect it and more easy to recognize it once you do kind of make those initial decisions.
It's interesting that you talk about the sentimental stuff. When I did my last garage clean out, which was pretty extensive, I pared down basically my entire life up until the last couple of years to one plastic tub. So I went through, you know, I had like all of these blue books and essays and term papers that I'd written. And of course, I thought they were amazing because I'd written them. But I'm like, how in the world? First of all, if I even go back and read these things, it's going to be embarrassing. Like what I thought about the Scarlet Letter. Like, who cares, really? No one cares. I don't even care. And so that just needed to go. And so I kept, like, there were just a few little like art things I'd done when I was in grade school that my mom had kept and given to me or whatever. And there's like a representative sample. But I'm like, this stuff has to go. My textbooks, I didn't even read those when I was in college. Why do I still have them? You know? So it's just kind of funny as you start processing what we really do need and what is just ridiculous, what we're holding on to, and moving from house to house without ever unpacking it.
And there's a lot of freedom in getting rid of that old stuff. I remember I went through my office, and I went down from 3 bookcases to one. And I remember after I did it, I was sitting at my desk and a problem pops up, an email or just something that needed a solution. And I just remember sliding my chair over to find the textbook that I would have pulled out to answer the problem. And mm-hmm. the textbook wasn't there. And I turned back to my desk and thought, well, all right, let's come up with a new solution. You know, like I wasn't tied to the old solutions that clearly didn't work because the problem popped up again. I said, okay, let's come up with a new solution. Let's move forward in my life and in my career. And I just think there's a lot of freedom. I don't think most of us realize just the burden, you know, the emotional burden, the physical burden, the mental burden that our possessions can be on our lives.
Yeah. Well, and in light of that, can you explain the difference? Because I know you talk about this principle, the difference between decluttering and de-owning. Tell us what that's about.
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, just some phrasing that I like to use. People, it makes for good tweets, you know, because it's, you know, alliteration. People like that. But, you know, the problem with organizing, and nothing against saying my professional organizer friends, because, you know, a lot of them do focus on the purging aspect of it. But, you know, the problem with organizing is that organizing is always just temporary by nature. You know, we find new storage units. We find new places to hide things. But eventually, we always have to deal with whatever it is that we're organizing. Meanwhile, there's just freedom in removing some of these things. There's the added benefit of giving and generosity, and rather than, you know, having a closet full of blankets in my house, I could, you know, actually give a blanket to someone who doesn't have one. You know, rather than having 8 pairs of jeans in my closets organized neatly, I can have a few pairs I actually love to wear, and I can give jeans to someone who doesn't have any. And this is what I think is what John the Baptist meant. You know, if you have two tunics, give one to the guy who doesn't have any. And so there's just different joy, a better joy. I think I've learned to realize there's a more fulfilling and better joy in giving away our stuff than we ever find in holding on to it for ourselves.
Yeah. Okay, so for the person who's sitting here going, oh, well, good, I don't need this because I do only have 3 pairs of jeans and I totally am minimalist and I just ride my bike to work and whatever, you actually talk about ways of simplifying even beyond your stuff. And so the people that are basically cluttering their time and their energy and all that kind of stuff, let's speak to that for a minute about what are some other ways to simplify your life beyond stuff.
Yeah, for us, minimalism became this gateway towards intentionality in ways that I had no idea when I first went down this road. So we got rid of a bunch of things. This was in May. It was over Memorial Day weekend that we started this process. My birthday's in December, so we're about 6 months later. And my wife asked me what I wanted for my birthday. And I said, gosh, I don't know. I've just spent 6 months getting rid of stuff I don't need. The last thing I want to do is to bring in a bunch of things that I don't need anymore. And a gym had opened up down the street. And I said, hey, how about a membership to the gym? Mm-hmm. This is clutter-free, and I have more time now that I'm cleaning less stuff and organizing and managing. And so she got me a membership to the gym. And after a few months of going to the gym, suddenly I'm going home, and I don't want to eat chips and drink a soda after being at the gym. So suddenly I'm starting to eat a little healthier as well. And so I'm starting to take a look at the way that I'm living my life in a brand new approach, an approach that says, hey, is this what I'm doing now bringing value into my life? Is it helping me accomplish what God's called me to do, or is it distracting me from it, whether it's, you know, unhealthy habits, whether it's just wasting time mindlessly, whether it's being caught up in responsibilities and appointments that we're just doing because we think, you know, that's what we're supposed, you know, that other expectations are being put on us. You know, we all have choices, right? We always have the power of choice remaining, and minimalism brought it not just in our physical possessions, but in other areas as well. And, you know, certainly, as the Bible would say, none of us are perfect, right? We've all got faults, and we have all got areas to grow in, and minimalism helped bring this about in my life for sure.
Yeah. So if you were looking at a, you know, say a 25-year-old single young adult, and you were going to recommend first steps for them in this, what would you say? If they want to go home this weekend and both practically and even spiritually look at an approach to this, what do they need to do?
Yeah, let me start just spiritually speaking. The the biggest mind shift for me, or the biggest new perspective, was that, as I mentioned before, that just Jesus knew what he was talking about. You know, he tells us not to hate people and not to commit adultery and not to steal. How come? Because those are all just crummy ways to live. And then Jesus says, don't stockpile treasures here on earth. And he says, give to the poor. And he says, sell your possessions and follow me. And we hear that and we have this complete opposite reaction of, what are you trying to do to me, Jesus? Like, why are you trying to make my life miserable? I it seems like everyone's happier owning more stuff. And so when we say, no, Jesus just knew what he was saying. He was providing us a better way to live, then that gives us the spiritual motivation to begin this process. And I tell people that, as I mentioned, start easy. You know, clothes are probably a big one for people in their 20s. Technology can be a big one. Beginning to really experiment, perhaps, those who already are minimalist. Hey, maybe I can just try living with less. Maybe I can put half of my clothes away, put them out of sight for a while, and see if I'm happier wearing just the clothes that I actually like. Mm-hmm. And I think that they'll find that they do, that it really is just a better way to do it. And lastly, I found the process to be very internal. The first trip to Goodwill went good. The second trip went fine. But by about the third or fourth van load of things I took to Goodwill, I started to ask myself some pretty difficult questions, like, why did I buy all this stuff in the first place? I mean, why would we buy things that we don't need? I don't know, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the world has just convinced us that if we chase after it, we're going to be happier, or we're trying to keep up with the Joneses, or we're jealous of someone else. We're trying to impress someone. We're trying to, you know, find confidence in the clothes that we wear. And as I began decluttering, I really reached some deeper places in my heart that I'd never been before. And I would tell anyone to expect that and to welcome it and to kind of sit in that for a while and become better because of it.
Awesome thoughts. Well, again, we've been talking to Joshua Becker, author of Simplify, as well as some other books. And you can find out more about what he's got going on, and especially the way that he blogs and suggestions he gives, some of the things that we talked about here, at becomingminimalist.com. Again, becomingminimalist.com. So, hey, Joshua, thanks for the great ideas and for really bringing it back to scripture and allowing us to just say, you know, this isn't necessarily about, you know, throwing out that sweatshirt as much as it is about what really are you putting your affections toward and your attitudes toward and your energies toward. So really appreciate that perspective.
Yeah, my pleasure. God's got great purposes for our lives, and they're certainly more valuable than buying stuff. So it's great.
Thanks so much.
Some days the sun shines bright and I'm up on top of the world. Next day those clouds roll in and the rain pours down on this girl. It goes from calm and cool to pure insanity. But through it all, even I can see that your hands are holding me when I'm falling apart. Your peace keeps calming all the crazy in my heart. Breaking down or busted up, you always help me see that your love won't leave even a mess like me.
We are finishing up this week's show with our inbox, and no guests today. I'm going to go ahead and answer this one. So I think I can offer a little bit of insight given my current situation. We're not sure if this was submitted by a guy or a girl, so I'm going to try to just address it generally. The question is, I'm 29 and unmarried, a handful of years into a career, and find myself in a situation where it makes sense to buy a house rather than rent. My question is in regard to the first point, that there's only me and a dog dog to live in the potential house. How much should I consider a possible future spouse in a house search? All right, so I'm going to assume that this person, and it sounds to me like it's a guy, but I'm going to assume that this person is basically decided that they're going to buy a house. Because, you know, if we're looking at, I'll just say for those of you, you know, when you think rent versus buy, that's a financial decision. I mean, you have to ask yourself, does it make sense? Can you get a good deal? Will you be in that area a while? All of those are things, you know, when, it can be a scary proposition to say, whoa, I'm actually going to put a down payment on this thing and commit. And we know the timetables that are involved to how long you have to be in a house before it's, you know, feasible or wise to sell it again. So renting versus buying, I definitely think that buying can be a smart move for people that can make it happen. When it comes to finding room, okay, so say you decide, and I'm going to assume this person is saying that they're going to do this, they're going to buy a home, and they're saying, how much should I consider a spouse as I'm looking, you know, for this house? And I would say that's probably a financial and a practical decision. So, you know, there are a couple things you have to consider. The first thing is, I would caution you against putting too much thought into a future spouse consideration, especially if you don't even have any potential prospects in the mix. I mean, if you're close to engagement, you know, then you're definitely going to want to think of this very specific person, this actual boyfriend, girlfriend, or fiance. You're going to want to think of them in the mix. But you know, you think of a spouse may want to in the future be part of a decision to find a home, or may want to create a new space with you. So don't hold on to your home too tightly and just say, you know, well, I'm going to buy this home because my future spouse would look good sitting in this corner. Okay. You're going to have to consider them in the mix. And if you don't know who that person is, you need to be willing to be flexible. So in light of that, you want to get a house that you can unload easily, and you're going to want to make considerations. You know, don't buy, if it is you and a dog right now, buy that space for you and a dog. Now, that doesn't mean it has to be a tiny, tiny thing. Of course, we just had an entire conversation about this on the show, that tiny sometimes is a good thing. But nor do you want to say, oh, well, I need something with a yard for my future children, and I need something that looks amazing or whatever. You want to buy what you can afford, and really for that future spouse, you need to be looking ahead to the future and make sure that you can enter that relationship as much as possible with little to no debt, managing your assets and your money very wisely in light of that. So buy for now, you know, you do not want to now pay for extra space you're not going to use. You don't want to pay for utilities and upkeep for something too big that really is kind of ridiculous, because, again, we're not looking at a specific time frame here. And then, you know, practical consideration, if you are going to buy a space and it's going to be a little bit bigger than you need anyway, well, think about getting a roommate, because that's practical and it's also just good practice for accountability and for understanding what it is like to live in a space with a person if you do move into marriage eventually. So finally, just, you know, in light of this, I just want to encourage you. I gave some practical tips, but overall, your mindset wants to be a house is not forever. I mean, think to yourself, people flip houses all the time. I think it's one of those things where I was originally looking at my career and saying, oh, I don't know if I want to get this job because what if I don't want to be here in 5 years? Well, the chances of me being in the 5 years initially were pretty slim. So go ahead and be willing to take the plunge, commit to it, trust God for where he's going to lead you in that, what your future is going to look like. Know that if you can swing it right now, it's probably a wise financial decision. Move ahead boldly, you know, and consider it a ministry. Consider it that a space that God is going to grant you to use openly, hold it with an open hand, to use it to bless others, to create a space for gathering. And again, be willing to move on if and when God tells you. When a spouse comes into the mix, trust God to make help you make wise decisions in the meantime. So hopefully that is some helpful advice for you. All right, that is it for this week's show. As always, we want to hear from you. Write to us at editor@boundless.org with a future question. Make sure you're checking our past questions as well. And that is it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org. Focus on the family.